Hey, I'm Danny Schechter. I'm your news dissector. I'm back again, Fridays, 1 o'clock here on the Progressive Radio Network, .com. PRN.FM is another way, to reach us. And you can call in at 888-874-4888. That number again, 888-874-4888. With me in the studio, Cat Waters, who's been, you know, playing kind of writing, shall we say,
shotgun
is the word I was looking for, the appropriate word for the program we're about to do today. Kat has been told me about the police reform organizing project known as PROP, and she went to this meeting and was blown away by the testimony of some of the people who have agreed to be guests on our program today. We'll introduce them in a minute. And last night I went to a meeting where a number of women mothers testified about what had happened to their sons, police abuse and, you know, a sense of insecurity and unease, particularly for young black boys in New York City. Parents very concerned about it. And so we heard some testimony. We'll tell you more about that in a minute. This program comes to you every week at this time. It's an extension of my blog at newsdissector.net, newsdissector.net, following up on some of the stories that I do, trying to bring them to life a little bit. Just want to announce first that my partner, Rory O'Connor, my partner in Global Vision, has published a new book called Friends, Followers, and the Future, How Social Media Are Changing Politics, Threatening Big Brands, and Killing Traditional Media. His name, Rory O'Connor. He'll be with us next week on this program to talk about his research and analysis of what's happening in social media. Your news dissector here also has a new book. I can't not promote it. If you know, if you're not for yourself, who will be for you? But if you're only for yourself, that's a bad no-no. Anyway, my new book is called Blogothon, Reflections and Revelations from the News Dissector. It's available from Cosimo, C-O-S-I-M-O Press. It'll be on Amazon and all the various places. So I'm going to be talking about that a little bit later as well. But first, welcome to News Dissector Radio.
To chase and to Wachovia, Wells Fargo, Sally Mae, to MasterCard and Citibank, and also B of A. American Express and Visa.
Theme from my film, In Debt We Trust, that warned of the financial crisis back in 2006. It's a song that, you know, I think cannot be played enough. At any rate, now we're shifting gears. We're talking about reality. We're talking about the streets of New York. We're talking about the conflict that is often, unfortunately, between the police and the people, as opposed to the police and the thieves and the crooks and the people who they're there to protect us from. In some cases, people are saying we need protection from the police. There's a police reform organizing project that's been organized here in New York. We'll tell you a little bit about that. We have two former police officers joining us on this program today, and you'll be able to not only hear from them but speak to them if you call us at 888-874-4888. Kat, why don't you introduce our first guest here?
It was not just yesterday, but the Thursday last week that PROP, the Police Organizing Project Reform Project, had an event at 208 West 13th Street where I met Adil Polanco and John Eterno, who will be joining us over the phone. So Adil, you were actually came out and it was on ABC News. I mean, I very rarely watch mainstream media, and I think I saw it on YouTube. You know, it wasn't, I didn't watch it on the regular news. I think I saw it on a YouTube video, of you actually coming out, one of the first to come out about the quotas and just refusing to, you know, to be turned into just a, you know, profit, a number making person. Can you tell us?
Sure. It happened, it was back in 2009. I actually was the first officer who came out. First officer who came out in the news. I couldn't hold it no more. I couldn't deal with it. I'm an officer racing Washington Heights. I know what it's like to grow up and around criminals. And just because you live around criminals, just because you live sometimes with criminals, doesn't mean you are one, and you should not be treated as. My problem started with the police department, like Adrian Schoolcraft and many other officers who step up, is that the second that we say something, they want to disappear us. They want to basically...
When did you become a police officer? When did you join NYPD?
It was back in July of 2005. Like I said, it was a long time coming. It's what I wanted to do. The expectation back when I grew up in Washington Heights in the early 90s was not, you know, too good. It would be more explainable, you know, if anybody coming out of Washington Heights at that age would be a criminal or somebody with no degree or anything, because that was the expectation back then.
So you chose to be a cop because you believed in the values of it. You wanted to help people. You were later at the 41st Precinct in Hunts Point, a tough assignment by any means. And yet you began to get, shall we say, dissatisfied by certain things that were going on within the police department, particularly quotas for arrests and other rules and regulations that you didn't think were really about law enforcement so much as but about making maybe the superiors look good.
Yeah, being a cop is not easy. It's not an easy job, but it's not for everybody. There's a lot of great cops out there. There's a lot of good officers out there, officers that are there to do their job, but unfortunately, there's no room for discretion. It's a numeric system. Everything is based on numbers. Officers cannot use their discretion the way they used to before. Mm-hmm. I started in the 46th precinct. I went to the 41st precinct. And after 2009, it was just not reasonable what we were doing. You talk about arresting kids for no reason, no particular reason other than walking home from school, issuing them summonses, stopping them, going through their pockets, maybe finding a bag of weed and then put them through the system for something that a summons should be issued. My big concern is that this is kids of color. This is black and Hispanic kids. This was me 10, 15 years ago.
Being targeted in
yes.
essence. Now we have somebody else on the phone with us, Bob Ganzi. Ganji, who's one of the organizers of the Police Reform Organizing Project, who I met last night at this meeting of mothers talking about what's happened to their children. I invited him to come on. He very graciously agreed. Bob, are you with us?
I am, Danny, and thanks for having me on.
Yeah, because, you know, I think it's important not only to define the problem, but also to talk about doing something about it. One of the things that was said last night is that we're not a think tank, we're an action tank.
Right.
We want to do something about this problem, not just complain about it. And I think we want to tell people just what PROP is. Could you do that briefly?
Yes. The PROP is the Police Reform Organizing Project, with emphasis on the word organizing. I'm an older guy, and I consider PROP to be an old-fashioned advocacy organizing campaign. The one new element is our use of social media, YouTube videos, Facebook, Twitter, those tools. And basically, we're engaged in a variety of activities and strategies, including the two forums that we're discussing at the moment. We organized a forum last week that we call From Behind the Blue Wall of Silence. And Adil Polanco, who just spoke, and John Eterno were two of the panelists on that forum. John is a former captain of the NYPD and now a professor and an author of a very important book. And Adil is currently technically still on the force, although he's been suspended with pay. And
is it gutsy for people like Adil to speak up and step
even,
up?
It's gutsy even for retired officers to speak up. And especially for someone like Adil, who's currently on the force, and also it was very gutsy for Adrian Schoolcraft to come forward, who Adil mentioned. Most police officers who are now on the payroll, even though they are unhappy with the current system, particularly the kind of the quota system that Adil was referring to, that there's so much pressure on the cops to basically hit their numbers when it comes out to issuing summonses and making arrests. So, and the pressure is such that cops will engage in arresting people and giving out summonses to people who have done nothing wrong. And Adil came forward and said, "I won't do this anymore. I won't arrest people who were just, young people, particularly black and brown young people who were on the way to the grocery store or coming home from school."
Do other officers at least acknowledge it, or I mean, they don't maybe come out about it, but do they at least admit that it's going on?
A lot of officers, what they tell me is that I did what they wish they had the guts to do.
Oh, good.
They've been feeling this way, but unfortunately, they know the system.
Yeah, I mean, understand that police officers have mortgages, they have families,
yes.
They're under a lot of economic pressure, just like everyone else in this society.
But if enough of them do come out, then you know you can still make your mortgage payments, but change the system to have it be in. You know, I mean, because since when does being a cop, a police officer, turn you into a like you were telling me, before, it's like turning you into,
a machine.
Just a, right.
It's very hard when they try to put productivity into a public service. That doesn't apply.
Right. How can you?
You cannot apply productivity to a public service.
There's a very strong, though, groupthink. There's a very strong institutional culture that affects, I think, virtually everyone who becomes a police officer. And so on the outside, it might seem easy to say, well, more and more of the men and women who are currently serving who are unhappy with the quota system and unhappy with the stop and frisk tactic, why don't they come forward? But that's a very difficult thing to do, and it's unusual when people do come forward. So it's critical for us who... people like us, people like the two of you on the radio show, and people like me who are doing organizing on this issue, to do what we can to educate the people, to expose the problem, and to help build a movement to press for change, with a particular focus on next year's elections.
You know, Adil was saying before, that they have these quotas, and this is all imposed from the top. This is not something that that the police... kind of sit around and say, "Oh, gee, let's harass more people today." I don't think they do that. I think there's, and we've seen this in the Occupy Wall Street protests, where so-called white shirts, who are the commanders, who are there supposedly to stop any abuses by people in the ranks
and
that supervise.
They punch somebody.
They were the ones being the most aggressive, inflicting the most violence. Why is that, Bob?
Well, the pressure is comes from the hierarchy of the NYPD. There's no question about that. It comes from Ray Kelly and the brass that works with Ray Kelly, and then the pressure comes down on the captains and the lieutenants that work in the precincts, and that happens on an everyday basis. I'm less sure of what was going on with Occupy Wall Street. I assume the word got out that we, meaning the cops, had to use very aggressive tactics to put the fear of God and everything else into the protesters so that fewer and fewer of them would be willing to turn out and engage in protests and disrupt the city, particularly disrupt the city around the financial district.
You know, it's interesting, your choice of words there, Bob.
Yes,
the fear of God. You know, some of these supervisors seem to think they are God, or God-like. They need to be worshipped and obeyed. Last night, we heard the testimony of, I think, Maxine King, a woman from the Bronx, who was talking about driving home. She's a community organizer, and she's driving home, and she sees somebody that she knows, a young boy who had been to her house, being thrown up against the wall. So she stops her car, and she says, "Excuse me, what's going on?" And within a few minutes, she was face down on the concrete, later arrested for simply expressing concern about somebody that she knew. It was very harrowing testimony to hear.
And it's not an isolated incident. We hear that kind of story frequently of someone who sees the cops engage in a questionable practice. They attempt to intervene, and either they get threatened, so they back off, or the cop turns on them. And if they don't back off, they will end up also harassed, or in Maxine's case, roughed up and beaten and treated very, very badly. And she lost her job temporarily, too, as a result of it.
Adil, I mean, you've suggested in no uncertain terms that there's a racial dimension to all of this.
That's
it's almost
the problem.
It's almost like colonial, police, patrolling the colony, keeping people in line. I mean,
where does this happen? That's all you have to look at it. Where are these incidents happening? It's happening in the Bronx. It's happening in Washington Heights. It's happening in Brooklyn. It doesn't happen in Midtown Manhattan. It doesn't happen in downtown Manhattan. And that's my problem. That's my problem. That is.
It's not fair. It's selective enforcement. I mean, one of the things that came through last night that was really harrowing to me, you know, as somebody who has a daughter who's, you know, to know that young black boys in New York, that almost every parent at age 9 feels they have to give them ID, fears for their safety, not from gangs, not from bullies, not from criminals, but from the police.
The problem is once you have the cops saying he did it, that's it. And you have 600 and something thousand tickets written, and 80% of them, correct me if I'm wrong, get thrown out. That's a lot of people you just give a ticket, or they miss a day of work. Some of them are going to get warned because they forgot about it. And these are tickets that we're going to get dismissed anyway. This is a waste of paper. And the thing with productivity, maybe you have to side with the devil a little bit. There have to be some accountability between cops, you know, just sitting in the car and not doing their job. But, you know, when you have an officer who's out there doing his job, answering his radio runs, doing what he's supposed to be doing, policing the community, and you have a cop who keep bringing numbers and numbers and numbers and getting applauded by the supervisors for bringing the numbers. How legal are these numbers?
Right.
And that's where we need to put the emphasis
on. And what about the stop and frisk? What's the theory behind that?
The thing with the stop and frisk, they call it the broken mirror theory, where they...
the broken window theory.
Broken window, I'm sorry. Something like, thank you, Bob.
You could break mirrors or windows on the show.
Yeah,
it's okay.
Mirrors are in the house.
They say that if you catch somebody who's about to commit a smaller crime, you can prevent them from committing a bigger crime, and that's fine. That's a good tactic. But you cannot generalize it. You cannot say that everybody who works around the Bronx is about to commit a crime. Everybody who's black and Hispanic is about or has a weapon. It's not right.
I just wanted to say, the other day I was at my brother's, and my brother's friend John Rodriguez was there, who was a former NYPD officer. He got injured, and so he's not doing it anymore. And he, you know, we were talking about this. I brought up the prop to him, and you know, he kind of talked about how. I kept saying, like, how come nobody on Wall Street has been arrested? I mean, you know, the little guy, you know, can't breathe without getting arrested. You can't, you know, I mean, and especially people, you know, young people that come from really challenging upbringings, really challenging circumstances, you know, like, you know, so what you call a crime is kind of really almost like, you know, like, you know, normal and understandable behavior when you come from really, you know, challenging backgrounds, and yet nobody on Wall Street has been arrested. And my brother's friend John said that NYPD's job is not to go after people like on Wall Street. That's like, right, the SEC and the FBI. And so, but like, right, it's understandable even that the little guy is going to get even more furious that, you know, none of the bankers have been arrested. And yet when, you know, somebody's got a join on them, like they're in jail for like 20 years. I mean, it's like outrageous.
Chase reported that it lost $2 billion and they made a bad bet on some financial transactions. I don't know if anybody is questioning Jamie Dimon, the head of Chase, in connection with this. You were saying...
You should go frisk, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, right. One of the retired police officers last week spoke about, told a story that was very, I think, illustrative, where he had been working uptown in Manhattan, and he grew up in inner city communities as a black man, and he was stationed in Central Park, and he was about to give a summons to a white couple that was drinking champagne in Central Park. And he got stopped from doing it by his supervisor, who was upset with him for, you know, sort of stepping out of line. And his point was, I'm expected to give out summonses to the black or brown teenagers drinking beer on a stoop, but I'm not supposed to give a summons to a white middle class or upper middle class couple who's drinking champagne in the park.
You know,
the solution is not to give the summons to the people drinking. They shouldn't get a summons. And nobody should get a summons for drinking beer in the stoop if they're not bothering anybody. And but the point of that story is that the point that he was making is that the quota system is applied to certain communities, and it's virtually always to vulnerable communities, politically powerless communities in New York City, very much to inner city communities of color, and to other vulnerable populations, immigrant groups, LGBT, homeless young people, mentally ill people, homeless people, sex workers, street vendors, all are harassed unnecessarily and very aggressively by the NYPD.
Bob, I'm going to ask you in a minute to give us some information, give our listeners information about how they can get involved in this campaign, how they can reach PROP and your efforts at organizing for police reform. You were saying?
As I said, we're engaged in a number of activities. We have a petition drive. We're arranging meetings with politicians, more and more of whom are beginning to speak out on this issue. We're very focused on building a movement along with a number of organizations that is pointing to next year's citywide elections, when we're determined, then again, along with other folks, to make sure that these issues, the issue of abuse of NYPD practices, become a main issue that's debated in the campaign, and that we would expect any mayoral candidate to oppose stop and frisk, to oppose the aggressively enforced quota system, or they won't get the support of people in the community. So we're the Police Reform Organizing Project. Our website is policereformorganizingproject.org, and people can go to the website and see about our upcoming meetings. We have a citywide meeting the week after next on Wednesday night, May 23rd. At the Urban Justice Center. They could also call us. They could call me at 646-602-5625. That's 646-602-5625. And again, my name is Bob Ganji. We're looking to engage as many people as possible in our organizing efforts.
Yeah, Bob, I have to say that meeting last night was very diverse. It was very energetic. It was very mixed in terms of old and young, as well as black, Hispanic, and white. It was a, you know, an example of concern by people here in New York City. And you guys have published a report I wanted to just mention called In Their Own Words. This is coming out of the Urban Justice Center, the Police Reform Organizing Project, and it has some quotes here.
Including some by Polanco.
From superior officers, but how's this for one? Shake everybody up. Anybody moving? Anybody climbing in that building? Summons. See summons. Yeah. Anyone walking around? Shake them up. Stop them. 250 them. No matter what the explanation. If they're walking, it doesn't matter. Another quote. Make them move. If they won't move, call me over and lock them up. Discon, no big deal. If you stop them, 250 them. How hard is a 250? What is a 250?
It's a stop and frisk.
Stop and frisk.
It gets me furious because a lot of cops, they have young kids at home.
Yeah.
And I get so furious when I see this because the fact that they're doing it to other kids, we're preventing a lot of things. There's a story in the paper about a kid who was joining the draft, the MLB draft. And he couldn't do it because the cop who say he burned another nigger in Brooklyn, that kid couldn't join the draft. That kid is not a teacher. But because he got arrested that year and it took a whole year to clear, he couldn't make it to the draft.
So they're ruining lives.
They are. We are. And the fact, when I say we arrest innocent people, I don't go out there and say, you know, I'm going to pick on the guy and arrest him. The supervisor will take care of me. I'll be on patrol, I'll be called over to the scene, and here, you have an arrest right here. Here, cuff him. And then if you don't, you're going to feel the consequences of that.
I just wanted to ask you, Adil, you know, you said that other officers agreed, you know, and they gave you credit for coming out.
Many.
But what was the treatment that actually happened to you, you know, for coming out? Like, didn't you get put on suspension?
What happened, a lot of people, and thank you for the question, because a lot of people think that Officer Polanco is an officer who got in trouble and now want to rat on everybody else. That's not the case. Back in 2009, it was September of 2009 that I started getting fed up. We put a sample of the kids in the Channel 7 new kids that are being put through the system and let out the back door the next day. Someone says for people for no dog license when we're not seeing dogs or anything. So I wrote a letter. I wrote a general letter to the public saying, you know, help us stop this. You know, this quota, this system is killing. And of course, before me, NYPD didn't have a quota system. They didn't have a productivity goal. They didn't have anything. After I recorded the supervisor saying that unless we want to work for Pizza Hut, we better come with a 20-in-1. Now they call it productivity.
You might as well be, though.
They call it productivity goals. I can sell marijuana or I can sell pot. Whatever I call it, I'm still selling an illegal drug. So you can call it productivity sensor, whatever you want to call it. It's a quota. And there's a law against it. There's a law against the quota.
The quota system is illegal, so that's why the high-level... police officials call it productivity goals. But remember, the pressure isn't only on the cop on the beat. The pressure is on the captains and the lieutenants in the precincts to make sure that precinct hits the numbers.
So going back to the...
Let me just... I have to do a break now because of... But, Bob, I'd like you to stay with us if you can. I know I only told you a few minutes, but this is just like going to that meeting last night, you know, and I haven't been able to stop talking about this because it's so important. So we're going to come back in a minute with a little bit more. Kat, who's coming on now?
We have John Eterno, who is also a NYPD officer who wrote a book on, you know, the subject matter today, and he's going to be on next.
And he's a former captain in the NYPD. So stick with us. The number here, 888-874-4888. I'm Danny Schechter. Stay with us.
That are more unequal than the United States in the distribution of our wealth.
This is corrupt!
Fight back! Something's wrong in America!
Bankers, corporations throw the country into the gutter like dikes. Whatever comes up, they win. Politicians are paid off to keep the game running. There's just no way you're going to be competitive in a rigged game.
This is corrupt!
Some of the best people we have will never get a shot.
Wrong.
The world in a minute.
Morning, Sandy Station carries no news of the world.
Corporate America owns all the networks.
Freedom of the press is only guaranteed when you own the press.
Communication breakdown. Pause for the message. Wake up. Every station is a gentrification. Global syndication is the shaping of the nation. ABC, Disney, NBC, GE, Murdoch is Foxy, and with a hint, he owns a pen. The camera, the sword, by a Coke, by a Ford, getting broke, getting bored.
And experience your psychic connection.
And that's the song News Goo, created by Polarity One. We're going to hear a little bit of Polarity One's latest production, which he did with the work group at OWS, Radio OWS. Their second program about May Day. We'll be going out with that a little bit later. But now we're continuing our discussion of police reform, the need for it here in New York. We have a new guest, a former NYPD captain. Kat, you want to introduce him?
His name is John Eterno. He's a PhD. He's a retired NYPD captain who now is the professor, associate dean, and graduate program director, Department of Criminal Justice at Molloy College in Rockville Center, New York.
Hey there, Captain. How are you? Welcome to the show.
Excuse the wait.
No problem. Not at all. I did want to mention a couple of things. I heard the talk. It was very vibrant. A couple of things I wanted to mention is that every one of the whistleblowers, including Adel Polanco, have been punished at this point. This includes Adrian Schoolcraft, Adel Polanco, who's there, and also a Sergeant Borelli, who recently came out, who was transferred to the Bronx from a Rockaway precinct that he worked in for 10 years simply for coming forward on this. So this issue is not just one of, you know, the numbers gone wild. It's really a performance management system and one of the department retaliating against the people who have tried desperately to overcome this. Now, many officers don't come forward because they're worried about being what they call now schoolcrafted. That is, that they're going to get in trouble because they come forward. And that's why many of them haven't. In my research, I have talked to hundreds of officers. We've surveyed, at this point, over 400 officers, And they all have come forward and said many things to me privately. But to come forward at this point is really to risk their entire careers, their pensions, and other things. I just had an active captain call me yesterday. And he calls me up and he says, you know, John, I know your reputation. I know who you are. I did not know him. And he says to me, you know, you guys are absolutely 100% on the mark with this thing. And I am so glad that there's somebody out there. But he says, you're it. There's really very little going on out there in the department to cause change. And this is the problem. It's become a system.
It's a mirror of maybe the larger society, the 99% versus the 0.001%.
Absolutely.
You know, we're a hierarchy. In a sense, Ray Kelly is the Pope of the New York City Police Department, and he feels that he has unlimited power and no accountability. And we have a situation here where people are afraid to raise questions. And, you know, the suppression of freedom of assembly and speech that we've seen in the Occupy Wall Street situation is now being applied internally inside the police department. The same reluctance to engage in dialogue and discussion and debate to allow people to have their say and to express their conscience is being suppressed in our own police department here in New York, which is considered one of the top police departments in the country, gets $1 billion from Washington for its anti-terrorism, you know, work. It's almost a little CIA in itself. And yet the officers on the beat, the people who are trying to keep New York safe, are afraid. They're working in fear that they will somehow be retaliated against if they raise questions or challenge this hierarchy. That's shocking.
And then they pass that fear on to the public. I mean, rather than, you know, behaving in like discussion, rather than, you know, officers having the ability to, you know, to reach out, to talk to, you know, like, you know, young minority, you know, kids, like human beings, and just talk to them, you know, rather than it's already like, you know, guilty, you know, you're just guilty, and they just already are being treated like they're guilty because that's the way the officers are like being treated.
You know, Adel Polanco, you're a prime example of this, and I have to tell you how brave I think you are in coming forward, and I find what you've done and what you're doing very important to democratic policing, not just in New York City, but throughout the world. You're doing a true service, and you are seriously one of New York's finest, without a doubt.
Thank you. My fight is far from over.
If it would have been for me, I would have been gone a long time ago and let somebody else deal with it. Because some of us only know how to be cops. Some of us don't know that we can go back to school and we can study and we can finish a career. A lot of cops only knows how to be cops, and that's another fear. What am I going to do if I leave this job? Where else am I going to make this amount of money?
But they're not even cops. They're not even really being a cop. You know?
Just being a machine.
So it's like, right, like they're literally being reduced and they're holding on. I mean, maybe they have a better career out there if they let go of this. You know, like it's like, why are they holding on to it? It's like, let it go. Maybe, you know, like you'll find a better career, you know, doing something better.
John, during the Occupy Wall Street protests, a former retired captain from Philadelphia showed up at the Zuccotti Park, Liberty Square there in uniform to express solidarity with the with the protesters, at least around their rights to protest. It wasn't even like I support this or that or politically. It's the principle of the thing. Go ahead.
I was just going to say you're absolutely right. And unfortunately, even the way the news media has been treated by the police on this has just been very, very discouraging. Democratic policing is just the antithesis of what's going on. And even the position that the police department takes on a lot of these issues, it's just untenable. For example, we were talking about stop and frisk and their broken windows theory idea. Well, this doesn't make any sense because when they only a few short years ago, they were doing less than 100,000 stop and frisk, less than 100,000. Now they're doing 700,000 or nearly 700,000 stop and frisk.
Whoa. That number, I don't want that number to kind of come sliding over my head and forget it. 700,000?
Put a body to each number.
It's absolutely insane. And the issue is this. The police department is claiming that crime is down 80%. yet at the same time they're saying there are 700,000 criminal suspects walking the street.
But then the crime is going up within the NYPD.
The crime's being hidden. That's where the crime is.
Well, let's talk about this, Officer Polanco. How is the crime being hidden?
It's a very dirty system. It's a system that I try to expose to them, and they don't want to hear about it. Many times we work in the beats, and complaints of robbery, complaints of assault, complaints of terrorism will be turned into reckless endangerment. And basically, you're told not to take the report. Don't take it. You're not taking it, or you're taking it for something less.
How can you not have an increase of crime with unemployment as high as it is today, with foreclosures as high as they are today, with people desperate to try to get by? You know, I work out of a church in Chelsea that serves 1,200 to 1,300 meals every day to people. That's the only meal they get in New York. This is a Holy Apostle Church. They do a magnificent job over there of serving the community. So you know that there are people who, when they're desperate, are going to resort to whatever they need to do to keep their families alive and to keep themselves alive.
I got to go back to the cop side, and this is still a little bit in me. You know, if you commit a crime, you know, justifications can be there, but if you commit a crime, it doesn't matter what color you are. You're black, you're red, you're green. You commit a crime, it's our job to get you arrested. You're breaking the law, it's our job to arrest you. Maybe later on you can speak to counseling, whatever. But well, how about those people that are not committing the crime and are being harassed by the police?
You know, Adel, I would say there's also another problem here. What about the victims of crime? What about, I've talked to rape victims, I've talked to people who've been robbed, and the police aren't taking the reports. Now, this doesn't just hurt the victims. It hurts the police department because they can't do their investigation. And in my book with Eli Silverman, we document all of this stuff. The name of the book, if you don't mind, is
Please.
The Crime Numbers Game, Management by Manipulation by CRC Press. And we do have a website, www.thecrimenumbersgame.com. And in there, we talk about how this has become a system of numbers. And it's not just crime numbers. We're also talking about summonses, arrests, stop and frisk, over and over again. And it's all being dictated from the top-down management style. It all comes from headquarters. So the pencil-pushing bureaucrats are sitting there counting beans instead of worrying about crime taking place out in the
field. Well, see, I have to leave because I have an important meeting coming up that I got to get ready for, but what brings together everything that we're saying, both the pressure on the police on the street to rack up a certain number of arrests or hand out a certain number of summonses to meet a quota, the pressure to downgrade the actual number of crimes being committed in a precinct. What's going on is extraordinary pressure coming out of the mayor's office and out of the commissioner's office to make the NYPD continue to look good, but it's continuing to look good on the basis of these numbers. It's not on the basis of the actual performance of police officers in the street. And one of the conversations I had with Adil and I've had with people like John Aterno is you don't evaluate police officers only on the basis of the number of summonses they give out or arrests they give out. What about crimes they prevented? What about the woman who's about to give birth that they got to the hospital? What about the other, you know, incidents that were going on in the community where they intervened and they prevented violence from happening?
That doesn't count.
Right. That's not counting in this system that the NYPD has developed for evaluating performance. Some of the good news, though, and I think there is good political news that's beginning to develop. You know, all previous polls have showed Ray Kelly running very well as a potential mayoral candidate next year. There was a recent poll that was reported in today's papers where he's beaten thoroughly up against Christine Quinn, not only Christine Quinn, who is right now has the most name recognition, but even running against Bill de Blasio, who's the city's public advocate,
who
a lot of people haven't even heard of, running against William Thompson.
You know what?
I think that some of the bloom is off the rose of Ray Kelly because of the publicity that's been coming out, because of the publicity that John Aterno's gotten, that Rio Polanco's gotten, that we've gotten, and all this is positive. And just want to leave, before I sign off, with the point and with the message, people out there listening to this show should reach out to us at PROP, at the Police Reform Organizing Project, to become part of the movement to change these abusive practices and to create a more just and livable city.
Well, that's so important. And, John, thank you so much for coming on at the last moment and sharing with us. I promise that would be a good discussion. I hope I lived up to my word. People can write to PROP, P-R-O-P, at urbanjustice.org, to indicate their interest in supporting this. There is a petition. There are things you can do.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much. Former Captain Eterno. We're trying to, we're still mulling over trying to understand how in the last 6 months a new word came into the vocabulary of most New Yorkers that they hadn't heard before. Mm-hmm. White shirts.
Yeah.
Where officers and commanders were basically setting an aggressive example for the rest of the police department and leading rather than stopping violence, actually encouraging it to some degree. What's your take on that? Why did that happen?
Well, that's a good question. In fact, at the Occupy Wall Street, we saw a deputy inspector mace a couple of helpless young women and obviously doing something that was completely egregiously wrong in his use of force. So that is a question. Why would this be happening? And in my mind, a lot of this is from the top down. It's coming from the very top.
Why don't the officers say no? Why don't people just start saying no?
That's a good question. But you know, I have to tell you, it's a paramilitary organization, and you are trained very extensively in following orders, and it's been my experience. You notice that the inspector was the one that said that used his mace. None of the other officers used their mace. It was just the inspector that did it, setting a very poor example indeed.
They don't have people skills. They used to tell officers and do as they please with officers, so they think they can do the same thing with people.
So you know what's terrible about this, though, is that as the higher ups, and I've noticed this as a captain, if you set a bad example, if a person who's a sergeant, for example, I had a sergeant who worked in a housing project, he was terrible. He'd go in there, he says, you know, all the people in this neighborhood are horrible, and he was just a very bad influence. When he does it, all the cops that work for him start acting the same exact way. I had to get rid of him. I had to transfer him, and I had to bring in another sergeant to work in this housing development.
So you know, we have to sum up a little bit now.
Sure.
Final thoughts, because we want to hear a little bit of this new radio show from OWS that hasn't really been played on the air here. We want to ask you once again the name of your book and the name of your website, Captain.
Sure. It's The Crime Numbers Game, Management by Manipulation, and the website is www.thecrimenumbersgame.com.
Well, thank you very much for being with us. I think it's still, even though you're now safely ensconced in academia and honored as a distinguished researcher and professor, I still think, you know, because of your ties to the NYPD, I think it still takes guts and leadership for you to take the stand that you're taking. I want to thank you so much. And you are a marvel here. I'm so pleased that you came on the program and are speaking out. You know, you keep practicing this. We'll run you for mayor.
I wanted to take a second and just go back to the question before. What happened to Officer Polanco? After Officer Polanco in September of 2009 came out and wrote a letter criticizing the department, trying to get some help, I was targeted. They were trying to look for something to get me in trouble. Polanco never been a trouble issue. I never got a command discipline or anything. Back into 2009, December 2009, my partner gets sick. They put us in a checkpoint. My partner started getting chest pain. I was suspended for refusing to leave an ambulance when my partner was getting admitted to the hospital. He was admitted for 2 days. And I've been getting paid for signing a piece of paper Monday to Friday for the past 2 years. I came up to the internal affairs and I reported that the supervisor were making us write false summonses for stuff that we did not observe. I reported it to internal affairs. 2 months later, they promoted that captain to inspector and they charged me with perjury for writing the summonses.
So here you have it, you know, a kind of a New York hero on the program today. I thank you, Kat, for turning me on to this issue. It's such a powerful issue. We just need to quickly sum up your final comment.
I'm just going to sum up that money makes everything backwards. So hospitals, rather than helping people to be healthy, are actually like making people sick and killing them. And now it's like the NYPD, instead of keep, you know, protecting and making people safer, are becoming the criminals and turning the public into criminals for a profit.
Self protect and produce.
It's
so
crazy.
Thank you, Officer. Thank you, Kat. Thank you to our other guests. I'm Danny Schechter, your news dissector. You can write to me at dissector@mediachannel.org. You can follow my blog at newsdissector.net. My new book is Blogathon from Cosimo Books. You can check that out as well. We want to go out today with the show that was produced by Radio OWS on May Day, produced by Polar Levine and a whole team of others, Austin Hill and others. So we want you to hear this as a little treat, and we'll be back again next week with more on News Dissector Radio Hour on the Progressive Radio Network, PRN FM.
Radio WS, get occupied.
The next stop is Wall Street.
OWS Actual News. George Martinez, a well-known Occupy Wall Street activist, hip-hop artist, adjunct professor of political science at Pace University, and a cultural ambassador for the U.S. Department of State, has decided to challenge Brooklyn Representative Nydia Velazquez as the first Occupy candidate for congressional office. Martinez has started a Twitter account and a Facebook page called Bum Rush the Vote, aimed at getting occupiers involved in electoral politics. It consists of a 10-point platform that strives to hold lawmakers to a higher ethical standard. It takes $1.2 million to fund the average congressional race, but it took only a bus ticket to get to Zuccotti Park, Martinez said. Plan not to fundraise for his campaign, but pledge to organize solely through grassroots means. On April 4th, Color of Change announced a new action calling on its members to end their membership in and financial support of the American Legislative Exchange Council, or ALEC, over its role in pushing voter suppression legislation across the country. Within 6 hours, Coca-Cola did just that, following PepsiCo, which said it was parting ways with the organization back in January. The clear and simple message was that you can't come for black folks' money by day and try to take away our vote by night, said Rashad Robinson, director of Color of Change. Companies like Coca-Cola and PepsiCo, who joined because of the corporate-friendly kind of legislation ALEC pushes, are finding it increasingly uncomfortable to be associated with the extremism of ALEC. In Poland on March 15th, over 1,500 beekeepers and their allies marched through Warsaw and deposited thousands of dead bees on the steps of the Ministry of Agriculture. Later that day, the Minister of Agriculture, Marek Sawicki, announced plans to ban MON-810, a pesticide found in genetically modified crops. Clothianidin, a pesticide manufactured by Bayer Corporation, has now been clearly linked to the unprecedented collapse of honeybee colonies in Germany, France, Poland, and the U.S. It is a neurotoxin that disrupts the bees' ability to process signals and has been a growing problem since 2006. On May 1st, millions of people throughout the world, workers, students, professionals, houseworkers, unemployed, and employed alike, will take to the streets to unite in solidarity with each other. There are marches being planned at Union Square, New York City, London, Trafalgar Square, Melbourne, Australia, and locally near you. The whole theme of May Day promotes unity and solidarity across the cities, counties, politics, and religion. Three constant calls have been made throughout the years: trade union rights, human rights, and international solidarity. Look up a May Day event near you and take to the streets.
We're going to hit the streets.
We're going to hit the streets.
We're going to take the fight.
We're going to take the fight.
Directly to sites of injustice.
Directly to sites of injustice.
We're going to strike.
So we're going to strike.
In the streets.
In the streets. Fight. We are the people too. We are united. Three. We have occupation here.
Whenever there's a beat, there's always a drum. With Occupy in town, woo! There's always some fun.
We dance and sing and do things until the police come.
With pepper spray and guns, you know it's the real thing.
Come on!
side effects may include rotten teeth, rotten gums, rotten life, rotten death, oppression, poverty, community debt,
loss of vision, loss of sight, loss of life, loss of groundwater, toxic blood. Some revolution may be required, especially in developing countries. See a doctor before committing suicide. Brought to you by the IMF World Bank.
Come on!
Workers' rights.
Come on!
Some people think the problem with America is that workers have too many rights. If you've seen many of the states in this country have restricted workers' rights, in Wisconsin and Indiana, they've made it harder for people to collectively bargain or earn a decent wage. They think that if we were getting paid less, it's good for their corporate profits. The problem is I don't have any disposable income to buy your garbage. And it's funny that the same people who are making it harder for me to earn a decent paycheck are making my bills more expensive so that when I'm in poverty, they can look at me like, hey, work harder. There's a reason they sound like slave drivers. It's because they're driving us like slaves. And when you look at state after state where anti-worker laws are instituted, those states have the lowest average wages, the most people on minimum wage, the most people living in poverty, the worst education, the worst healthcare. I wouldn't want to live in one of those states. You know, someone told me the other day what would happen if America didn't have workers' unions. I told them we wouldn't have weekends. We wouldn't have child labor laws. It doesn't make sense to replace a 30-year-old worker with a 14-year-old worker. And it's disgusting to cut that kid's school's funding at the same time you make it easier for him to get into a workforce and earn a minimum wage. The larger issue is about rights, and it's about restricting rights, whether it's women's rights, workers' rights, consumers' rights. If you're a person, you're not that important because the corporations are people and they're too big to fail. I would love to see the people who are fighting unions, I'd love to see them give back all the money that they earned in overtime. I'd love them to go into work on Saturday and just not take pay. They would love that. I'm sure they're lining up for it, but they're not. Abraham Lincoln once said that labor is the superior of capital. Last I checked, Abraham Lincoln should have some sway with people who are anti-union. But if that's not the point, let's remember that Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. died fighting for labor rights. And if it's something that a man like him could die for, it's something that men and women like us should live for. Thank you very much. That's my rant. Have a good one.
I'm a union woman, just as brave as I can be.